I call this the 12 A's of parenting. These are just ideas I've jotted down over the last couple of years and working with a lot of parents, whether it be homeschooling parents or parents in our schools back in Virginia. And also these ideas come from a lot of different books I've gone through and read, a lot of different tapes I've listened to on parenting. Of course, one of your goals should be to be an excellent parent. That should be one of your great goals in life, just to continually learn more and more about parenting. I'd especially like to recommend reading at least one good book a year on parenting. Out of your 12 books a year or out of your 52 books a year, whichever ones you're going to do, try to make sure at least one of those books is on parenting. If you're reading only 12, you're going to read 52, maybe about 10 of them could be on parenting. And also, again, learn from other families. If you see something that other families are doing, ask them for some suggestions. It seems to me that one of the main jobs of parenting is balancing love and limits. Balancing love and limits. Those seem to be the two things. Maybe some families are really big on love and very short on limits. Some are big on limits and rules and short on love. You want to have that proper balance. Of course, your main job as parents is to get your kids to heaven. That's your main, ultimate goal, is to get your kids to heaven. And in order to do that, though, we have to use what St. Thomas Aquinas called building grace on nature, that God's grace builds on nature. So you want to be able to develop those natural virtues, those good qualities in your kids upon which God's grace can build. Oftentimes, you know, kids if they come from very dysfunctional families or have a very difficult early childhood, it's harder oftentimes for them to, let's say, develop some of the supernatural virtues if some of the natural virtues aren't there. There's a saying that we spend the next 50 years of our life getting over the first 5. That's probably very true. So here are 12 A's of parenting. Number one is affection. A parent should be very affectionate with their kids. Affection makes the kids feel loved. There have been studies in the turn of the century where there's been infants who had been fed but not given any affection at all. They were fed through a bottle or whatever and not touched at all. And the babies were dying. Babies started to just shrivel up and die without affection. The experiments had to be stopped. Some of the infants did die during these experiments. That children need more than just food. They need actual hugs to keep them alive. They need physical contact with their parents to keep them alive. An interesting study says that up until 1 year of age, little boys get the exact amount of affection as little girls. So they get a lot of hugs from their mom and dad up until 1 year of age. But about once a boy turns about one, they only get 1/6 of the amount of affection that little girls get, as far as like hugs and kisses from their mom and dad. It's also a fact that boys get into trouble 6 times more than girls. So some of these Christian psychologists are saying, hey, there could be a connection between the amount of affection that's given a child and the amount of trouble they get into. The more affection, the less they seem to get into trouble, maybe because I'm sure there's many reasons, but I'm sure that a child who's given a lot of affection does feel loved, does feel good about themselves, that they are loved by their parents, and maybe they don't have to get into as much trouble. Anyway, you can take that for what it's worth and see if that's true. One psychologist said a child needs 4 hugs a day for survival, 8 hugs a day for mental health, and 12 hugs a day for emotional growth. So I'd recommend you at least give all your kids at least 12 hugs a day if you can. My family was very affectionate growing up. Even we still are. If I see my sisters, my mom or my dad, we always give each other a hug whenever we see each other. Even when I was growing up, we'd be walking down the hall or in the kitchen and just give each other a hug. It's just there's something that there's a lot of good that comes out of that. In fact, there are studies also that those who receive a lot of affection seem to be healthier, that their levels, their immune system is built up. So one of the best things you can do if someone, let's say, is sick or in the nursing room or in a hospital, just hold their hand or put your hand on their shoulder, and it can do an awful lot of good for them. I remember one seminar where Gary Smalley was telling the husbands that, you know, their medical bills will go down, you know, if you give your wife more hugs, because they won't be sick as much and things like that. So he was watching. All these guys are putting their arms around their wives because those little money signs are ringing in their eyes. Say, hey, if this helps bring down the bills, yeah, you got to be more affectionate. And one of my favorite stories of affection, it's a true story, was an insurance company over in West Germany. For 20 years, they studied their employees, their male employee insurance salesmen, and they found that the employees who had affectionate, loving spouses, loving wives, these guys who got a big hug and a big, you know, wet kiss before they went to work in the morning, and when they got back at night, these men lived an average of 5 years longer than the men who did not have affectionate spouses. So men, your lives are at stake here. Plus, the other good thing is that these men also earned an average of $5,000 to $10,000 per year than, and I'll tell you, the wives really perked up yesterday when they heard that. You know, that's an extra, it's another car, a little bit more of a wardrobe and all these things. That's not bad, just for having more affection in your family. 5 more years of life and maybe $5,000 to $10,000 per year. So there's, to be affectionate pays off in many, many ways. Affection for your kids can be done through just hugs and just putting your hand on their shoulder or pat him on the head. All sorts of things that parents can, you know, show through deeds their affection that they have for their kids. Words, of course, are very valuable to kids. Saying the most important words like, I'm proud of you, I love you. These words to the kids just do so much good. And giving the kids loving eye contact. Unfortunately, in America, usually when the parents look into the eyes of their children, it's usually when they're reprimanding or scolding them. And so you can do a lot of good by looking lovingly into the eyes of your kids and smile at them and look with love at your kids. That's another way to be affectionate with them. It sort of fills their emotional tanks. And teenagers, especially you know, these days, need a lot of affection from their parents. Fathers need to be especially affectionate with their daughters during the growing up years and even to high school years, because it's a fact that you know, if the girls who, you know, everybody craves affection, kids, little boys, girls crave affection from their parents. If they don't get it from the affection from their dads, for example, they'll look for it from some other guy, and this is where sometimes the girls get into problems with in dating and premarital sex and things like that. Because they're just craving affection. You're not so much craving the physical act, but they're craving just to be held, just to be held by a man. And so much better to be held by their dad than by some, you know, football player on the, you know, and at school. So be very affectionate with your daughters and also with your sons. Like we said, up until, you know, boys only get 1/6 the amount of affection, you know, from their parents as little girls do. And some of the more recent studies by some of the Christian counselors say that that there are, of course, many reasons probably for homosexuality, homosexual tendencies, but that they found that if the fathers are affectionate with their sons, the chances of homosexuality is very, very rare. It's usually a very aloof father, a very unaffectionate father, dominant mother, that sometimes leads to homosexual tendencies on the part of sons. Which is just the opposite of what a lot of guys think. They think, I'm not going to hug my son and make a sissy out of him. But just the opposite seems to occur. So you have to give your sons a lot of hugs, a lot of affection, and of course, your girls as well. Number two is acceptance. Remember the second A of parenting? Acceptance. Another word for this is unconditional love. Just accepting the kids for who they are. Not for what they do, but just for who they are, that they are your son or daughter, and they are a child of God. If you unconditionally love someone, it gives them a sense of security, a sense that they're loved no matter what, which is what God's love for us is. God has unconditional love for us, which is amazing. Sometimes we don't even realize it, that God is love. There's nothing we can do to diminish His love for us. Now, of course, you might not like what people do. We might not like what some of your kids do, but the kids need to know that you have unconditional love for them, that you love them no matter what, that you try to be an image of God's love for them. In fact, many of the Christian writers say that children get their impression, their view of God from their father, that you represent God the Father to them, and so that if you're loving and kind and forgiving and merciful, they have a much easier time seeing God the Father as loving, forgiving, kind, and merciful. But if fathers tend to be very severe and strict and unloving, uncaring, oftentimes in these studies it seems that the kids grow up with that understanding of God. So you do represent God, that you are the living representative of God in your children's eyes, especially during the young age. So be a sign of God's unconditional love. That you love them no matter what. Again, you do have to discipline them. You do have to have the limits. But what they should see in you is a reflection of God's unconditional love. Again, if kids don't find acceptance from you, they'll try to find it from friends or from gangs or from other groups. The kids want to be accepted, and if they don't find that acceptance, that strong acceptance from their parents, I guarantee it, they'll look for it from somewhere else. Number three is approval, giving the kids approval. Another word for this is praise, giving the kids a good compliment. Like Mark Twain said, I can last a month on one good compliment. That's all he needed was one a month. So giving the kids compliments, it's, I call it watering the flowers or the vegetables. Imagine that your children, and all of us have good qualities and bad qualities, all of us have flowers and all of us have weeds growing in the garden of our soul. And we need to, in a sense, water the good qualities of the children, water their vegetables, water their flowers. So many times we water their weeds that we reinforce their negative qualities, which of course we don't want to do. How foolish would it be if we had a garden in the backyard and we took our bucket of water and instead of watering all the vegetables and flowers, that we watered the weeds? How ridiculous, how stupid that would be if we did that. And yet that's oftentimes what parents do if they continually harp on and reinforce the child's negative qualities or negative traits. Praising the child's good qualities just lets them blossom. And in fact, praising someone gives them energy. In fact, you can almost actually see somebody come alive when they're praised, or almost shrivel up if they're criticized. There's a saying, what gets praised gets repeated. Same thing in the workplace. If an employee sees an employee doing something and praises them, the chances of them repeating that are so much increased. Whereas what really hurts companies and corporations is somebody pouring their heart out, doing all sorts of good things, and never having the employer recognize that and appreciate and give praise for what they do. With praise for the kids, four qualities or a praise should be number one. Praise has to be sincere. You have to be sincere about it. If you see something in your child that is very praiseworthy, let's say their generosity, their punctuality, their kindness towards another brother or sister, if you genuinely see that, then praise them with sincerity. Number two, they recommend praise being specific. That you pick a specific moment and you praise them, not just for being just a great kid, because you can tell, hey, you're a great kid, but if you can tell them that, hey, they did a very good job on this particular thing and that particular thing, the more specific it is, the more it does seem to be beneficial. Number three, praise should be immediate. If I praise somebody a year later for something that they did, it seems to lose something, right? If it's too long away from the actual event. And there's a saying that timing is everything, right? They always say like one rose on the actual day of the anniversary is better than a dozen about a week later. It's also a lot less expensive. And then number four, the praise should be intermittent but continuous. And like I mentioned to the moms yesterday, that a great way to praise people is through others. A lot of bosses do this. A lot of employers do this. If they're at a cocktail party and they're talking to one of their employees' wives, they'll give a compliment, you know, to you through them, because they know it's going to get back to you. It's a great way to build companies and build corporations, because you can tell a wife, because not only is it a compliment to her, but I guarantee it will get back to the, you know, to the employee as well. I mentioned yesterday also that oftentimes when you're talking directly to your kids, sometimes they don't tend to listen to you. You ever notice that? But if you're talking about them in another room, those kids are like, listen, what are they saying about me? Or if you're on the phone talking to someone, those kids are listening. What are they going to say? And that's a beautiful way to reinforce good qualities and help develop virtue and good qualities within the children, is to speak well about them. And again, it's not bragging, it's not those things. It's just basically, maybe we talked about this yesterday with the mom, you know, thanking God or bringing God into it by saying, you know, that God has given my child a beautiful gift of being very kind to their brothers and sisters, or all sorts of, God has given them the talent of being able to draw well or being able to be very good at sports. So, again, this is ways that you can encourage and give praise in a way that, of course, gives all the glory back to God. Number four is attention. The American PTA Association said that the average father in America spends less than 2 minutes a week in one-on-one, focused attention with their infant, you know, with their baby. And the average father spends less than 7 minutes a week in focused, uninterrupted attention with their teenager, one-on-one, without the newspaper, without the TV, without the stereo. Which, of course, that is. So you guys are doing great. I mean, you really are. Because you, I think, you know, maybe 10 times, 20 times better than the average of what the average fathers, according to the American PTA Association, say, that fathers, generally in the United States, do not seem to spend much time one-on-one in focused attention with either their children or their teenagers. In fact, many parents are now taking courses on how to detect whether or not their kids are on drugs. And if they spend time with the kids, they'd be able to tell that. You know, they don't have to go to some class to find out, you know, how do you detect if your kids are on drugs? If you're spending a lot of time with your kids, that can do the trick. There's a saying that we pay attention to what we value. We pay attention to what we value, and we ignore what we don't value. I mean, it happens all the time. Let's say you're at work and somebody comes in, you don't really pay attention to them. Whereas if the boss comes in, hey, you value, hey, you pay attention to what you, to what we value. And so subconsciously, the kids know that if they're being paid attention to, that their parents value them. And of course, one of the best ways to pay attention to someone, to value them, to show them that we value them, is to listen to them. Listening does three things. First of all, it builds trust between the two people. If your child is talking with you, if you're listening to them intently, you're building that bond of trust with them. Number two, a listening builds character in the listener. That when you're listening to someone, you have to use self-control and development of character to be able to listen to someone. The reason for that is that we can think in our mind about 400 to 500 words a minute. We can only speak 150 to 200 words a minute. Now maybe some of your wives can get gusts up to 400 or 500. There are people that can speak faster than 150, 200 words a minute. But generally speaking, we can think two or three times faster than people can speak. And so because of that, it builds character in the listener to be able to listen intently. And so when your child's speaking to you, by listening to them carefully and with attention, it's a great compliment to them. It shows not only that you value them, but it also, you know, develops your own character. And number three, listening to a child builds their own self-value, their self-worth, their, you know, good, honest self-esteem. Number five is appreciation. Appreciation means basically just thanking them and being grateful for what they do, whether it be doing the dishes or taking out the garbage, just thanking them. It makes the person feel important to be thanked. If the kids clean their room, or if they're extra courteous or polite, then you know, we thank them. There's a saying from Ken Blanchard. How many of you read The One-Minute Manager? Anybody read that book, One-Minute Manager? Okay. He says you have to catch your employees doing something right. And if you see them doing something good, you say, hey, you did a great job. And people are just blown away that you actually caught them doing something right. Usually we have this policeman approach that we ignore a person if they do something right, but we only nail them if they do something wrong. And Spencer Johnson, who co-authored that book, wrote a great book called The One-Minute Father. The One-Minute Father. And he applies the same principles of management to being a father. Excellent book. That's also on cassette tape. Number six is admiration. Again, this sort of ties in with approval. Admiration is acknowledging, let's say, qualities or good traits in a child. And again, this is how you develop virtue. This is how you water their good virtues and good qualities. If you admire, let's say, their strong faith or their devotion, or let's say their generosity or their kindness or their punctuality, if you admire, let's say, you're trying to develop in your child the theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity, the cardinal virtues. You're trying to develop the prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude in your child. If you can, develop the child's courage, it can do a great deal. So you can admire the good qualities that God has given them and help to develop them. You can also admire their accomplishments, things that they do, maybe projects or reports or homework. Those things are also very valuable to admire, the good things that they do. Number seven is apologizing. I think a good parent is one who apologizes if they maybe yell or scream or get impatient or get angry. And they can come back and say, I'm really sorry about that. First of all, apologizing shows the kids some very important qualities in their parents. It shows them strength. A strong person is one who can apologize and say they're sorry. It also shows humility. It teaches the kids that it's okay that if they do something wrong, that they can say that they're sorry. And again, this is a good preparation for the sacrament of penance, that they can tell God that they're sorry. If they see the parents acknowledge that they were wrong, that they did something wrong, then the kids can, it's much easier for a child to say, yes, I too did something wrong. I am sorry, let's say, for my sins or for doing something else wrong. Number eight is being available. See, none of these things are any good if a parent's not around, if the parent doesn't spend time with the kids. Kids spell love, T-I-M-E. And that's here, kids spell love, T-I-M-E. That some people say, well, I'm going to spend 3 minutes of quality time with my kids today. There's a saying that the only way you can get quality time is from the quantity time. That quality time comes about after a lot of quantity time. It's almost like looking for nice shells on the beach. You have to look through a lot of shells before you can find some really good quality ones. You have to look through a large quantity. I remember when I was growing up, and my dad would always, myself and my two sisters, he would take us every once in a while just on like a special half a day or a day just by ourselves, and we get to pick what we want to do. Let's say go fishing, or we would, my sister would go to see a doll museum or go play miniature golf. And we just spent, even if it was a few hours, that special quality time and the quantity time with my dad. I still remember some of those days even now. One day he'd take my sister out, another one me, another time my other sister. We just spent a few hours or a few days doing something, and it gave us a chance to talk. Then, of course, it doesn't need to be big things. It could just be very small things. It doesn't have to be Disney World or big trips like that. It could just be small things, going for a walk, going for a hike, doing something together. These small things can make a big, big difference. There's a saying that either you have to, in some time in your life, you're going to have to spend time with your kids, either when they're young, to form them and to train them and to educate them, or when they're older, visiting them in prison and You're going to have to spend time with your kids sometime in your life, and it's much easier to spend time, like Maria Montessori says, you know, forming the child rather than repairing the damaged person later on. So much better to do the preventive thing, to form the child in the right way, because you will have to spend time with your kids one time or another. Number nine is affirmation. Again, this ties in with some of the other ones, but affirmation is encouraging. Like St. Paul says, say only the good things that men need to hear, things that will really help them. Affirmations build people up. Like Conrad Bars has a very good book called Born Only Once. Conrad Bars, since he's dead now, but he was a Catholic mystic psychologist, and he wrote a book, Born Only Once, which is called The Miracle of Affirmation, that you have to encourage and expect, you know, great things from people. Because people will live up to your expectations. Employees will live up to your expectations. Children will live up to your expectations. So one of the best things you can do is to have good expectations for the kids. I mean, even people also will live up to their bad expectations if people have poor expectations of them. A study not too long ago of all the prisons in America revealed that 85% of all the inmates were told at one time when they were young or teenagers, either by their parents or by a significant person, that they'd never amount to anything, that they would wind up in prison, and their life would be a disaster and a failure. 85% grew up with these poor expectations that they're never going to amount to anything. So people do tend to fulfill our expectations of them. If you expect good things from people, the chances are that you will get them much more so than otherwise. Then number 10 is approachability. Being approachable is something that parents need, that priests need. In fact, John the 23rd said that in a letter he wrote to seminarians back around like 1961, he said that priests need to be approachable, that so that people can come up and talk to them about things or about problems or to go to confession or whatever. So priests need approachability, and so do parents. Parents need to be approachable. It's one of the saddest things in working with teenagers in my own parish when a girl comes and says she's pregnant, and she says, I could never tell my parents. They would kill me. There's no way I could tell anybody but my parents. And that always makes me sad, because the parents should be approachable, that the kids know that they could, if they make a mistake, turn to their parents, and that they would be willing to to talk with them and to work things out. It's so sad that there are cases where the girls would go off and have an abortion rather than have to tell their parents about that. Number 11 is accountability. That the kids have to know that they're accountable to somebody, that they are responsible, that you are their parents, that they are accountable to you. This is where discipline comes in, obedience comes in, submission to you. And I've often found that if parents are accountable to God, then children will be accountable to their parents. But if you submit to God, like for example, if you as a husband, as a father, submit to God, your wife will submit to you. Your children will submit to you and your wife. There's this chain of command that if you're obedient to God in your own life, in the Ten Commandments and the teachings of the Church, if you're accountable to God, and if you're submissive to God in your own spiritual life, in your personal life, then the kids seem to be, from what I found in families, kids seem to be more submissive and more obedient to their parents. Number 12, the last one, is authority, loving authority. Loving authority. And this means, of course, not being a dictator like the guy in The Sound of Music, you know, the captain, you know, before his conversion. He was a dictator, and of course he had that place running like a military ship and everything, and of course, I mean, the kids feared him and everything, which was okay. They kept a smooth running household, but the love wasn't there. And so of course at the end, after he had his conversion, it seems that that the kids were respectful of his authority. So In fact, Josh McDowell talks about four different types of parenting. He says the one would be called the autocratic, and that's, of course, doing that the parents make the rules and that's it, and there's all limits and no love. And, of course, he said there's the permissive parent, where basically you can do anything you want. Then there's a neglectful parent who says, I don't even care what you do. And then there's a relational parent that establishes the proper balance of love and limits. This is a great sentence from Josh McDowell. Rules without a relationship lead to rebellion. Rules without a relationship lead to rebellion. And this applies in the church, and it applies in families. In families, let's say, if the parents set the rules, but if there's no bond of love, no real relationship between the parent and child, no friendship, then that's going to lead to rebellion. Same thing in the church. If people, for example, don't have a relationship with Christ, then you try to tell them the rules, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of the church, they're going to rebel if they don't have that relationship with Christ. So we need to establish that relationship with Christ, relationship with the church, and then when the rules are set down, it won't lead to rebellion. The other aspect of that is, the other side is, rules plus a relationship lead to response. Rules plus a relationship lead to response. You need rules, but you need a relationship with those rules in order to have the kids respond. And of course, with authority comes, on the part of the parent, they have the obligation, you have the obligation to live a life of integrity and honesty and to really be worthy of the obedience that the kids give. Because all of us are reluctant to give respect and authority to someone, let's say, who is not a moral person, who doesn't have integrity or doesn't have honesty. We're all reluctant to recognize someone's authority if they're not a person of integrity and honesty. So those are the 12 A's of parenting. And, some of these apply very well to your own marriage and to your spousal relationship with your wife. For example, things like spending time with your wife. I know of one husband and wife in my own parish. They've been married 25 years. And when you see them, you can tell they're still so much in love. And they hold the car door open and holds the door and gives a dozen roses now and then and some flowers and a box of chocolates and all these nice little things. And you can tell they're so much in love. I asked the husband, what's the secret of their romance, even after 25 years? He says, Father, I'll tell you the secret. For the last 20, 25 years, my wife and I, every week, have gone to this little Italian restaurant. And this place is so romantic. There's music, there's dancing, there's candlelight. So this has kept our romance alive for 25 years. I go on Tuesdays, she goes on Fridays. I said, no, you got to be kidding me. He says, Father, I'm just teasing you. But these little acts of kindness and spending time with each other, They go a long way. But I forgot to mention that to your wives yesterday, so I'll give you permission to pass that one on to them. I didn't mention that yesterday. And then lastly, just to sum up here, it seems to me that the best things, I want to also mention a couple books that I found helpful. Number one is How to Be a Hero to Your Kids by Josh McDowell, a great book. And in that, he talks about the 6 A's of parenting, the 6 A's of parenting: affection, acceptance, attention, accountability, availability, and authority. He talks about the 6 A's of parenting. I added 6 more. That's a great book, How to Be a Hero to Your Kids. It's also on cassette tape, but it's also available in any Christian bookstores. Raising Positive Kids in a Negative World by Zig Ziglar. Zig's one of my favorites. I've met him a couple times at different seminars. Really good Christian. Been married 47 years. Says he loves his wife more now than when they first met. He also has a great book called Courtship After Marriage. Courtship After Marriage. I didn't mention that to your wives yesterday, but you might want to jot that down. Courtship After Marriage. Zig's a great guy. And he's been fighting against drugs and against pornography and against abortion for a long time. Really good Christian, Southern Baptist. His book, Raising Positive Kids in the Negative World, is excellent. It's also a 6-cassette program, as well as Courtship After Marriage. That's also a 6-cassette program. I'm going to mention Born Only Once by Conrad Bars. The Key to Your Child's Heart by Gary Smalling. It's a great book. It's also on cassette tape. The Key to Your Child's Heart. Anything by Gary Smalley is great. He has a book called, and tapes called, How to Energize Your Mate, How to Meet Your Husband's Needs, The Incredible Worth of a Woman. So all my engaged couples, I give out these tapes. You know, they How to Meet Your Husband's Needs, The Incredible Worth of a Woman. And it's funny, the guy takes the tape and says, you listen to this one, How to Meet Your Husband's Needs. This, you got to listen to that one. And the wife says, you listen to this one, The Incredible Worth of a Woman. There's a great tape. There's also a video series, too, that they did called The Hidden Keys of Loving Relationships by Gary Smalley. Then any books by Maria Montessori, if you can find any, then most of them are out of print. Some of them are in the process of being reprinted. Any books by Maria Montessori, especially The Secret of Childhood, The Child in the Church, and The Child in the Family. Excellent books on child development. Maria Montessori, very devout Catholic, received many awards and praises by the popes during the early part of this century. And then, of course, The One-Minute Father by Spencer Johnson. And then How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Highly recommended. I just finished my fourth reading of it just not too long ago. I also have it on cassette tape. And I remember Father Hardin was up at our seminary once, and the group of us priests hanging around, seminarians hanging around afterwards, asking him questions. Father, what would be good books to read? And he lists all these books. And he said, by the way, you got to read How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I made a note of that. It's an excellent book because it can really help in your relationships with your kids and with other people that you work with. So in these 12 days of parenting, make sure you avoid the 3 C's of parenting. Avoid criticizing, condemning, and complaining. Those 3 things. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. It's like the one husband who told his wife, I can't believe how God could create someone so beautiful and yet so dense. You remember what her response was? God made me beautiful that you would fall in love with me. And God made me dense so I would fall in love with you. That's a pretty good one. I told that to the wives yesterday. I'm surprised they didn't share that. Maybe some of them did share that with you. But criticizing, in fact, Gary Smalley has some great tapes. He has a lot of good stories on his tapes. In fact, when he was giving these seminars, his wife, Norma, would be sitting in the front row. And he would be giving this seminar and talking about relationships. And he would, little did he know, he was, through some of his jokes about her, he was really criticizing her. He would say things like, my wife Norma treats me like a god. Every morning she places burnt offerings in front of me. She would say, and she's there, you know, her arms are going like this, you know, and she's really getting really resistant. And then, of course, when he go home at night and he wants to be affectionate, get away from me, you know. He did not know what he did. And he didn't realize that his words closed her heart. And in fact, the words of, that's one of Gary Smalley's key principles, is that the power of words, that if you compliment someone, it opens them up, it almost blossoms them. If you criticize someone or neglect someone in some way, they tend to become very resistant. And oftentimes this happens in marriage where the husbands want like affection and physical relationships with their wives. They can't understand why she's so cold or resistant. Little do they know, well, it's what Zig Ziglar said, if you gripe about the mashed potatoes at dinner, all you're going to get for the rest of the evening is a cold shoulder. That's what Zig Ziglar says. I think that's true, that the words are so powerful that they can close someone or they can open someone. And again, like Gary Smalley was at the airport, and this guy comes up to him and says, can I carry your bag? And he says, no, she can walk. And things like that. And he didn't realize that when he told these things at the seminar that everybody did a big chuckle and everything, and she wasn't really smiling when she heard those things. So he began to realize the power of words. And even if it was a joke, he made sure that what he said to her would not close her heart and not close her spirit. And so he's very careful then not to criticize. So if you can find any of those books, any of those tapes, some of those things might be of value to you. Okay, thanks. We'll stop there.